is to make a comment.
With no one in the audience wishing to make a comment, we will close out the public comment period. And before moving to the minutes, I'd like to welcome to the Transportation Committee Councilman Aguirre. Thank you. Who is the will be assigned to the commission in place of Councilman Lovane. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Did everyone have a chance to review the minutes from the last meeting? That would be the November 15th meeting. And if anyone has any corrections, please advise. If not, do I have a motion to accept the minutes as presented?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
Do we have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'll recuse myself from the vote. That wasn't here.
Okay. Moving on to the third item, the consent agenda. Does anyone have a item that they would like to have reviewed on the consent agenda?
On the Potomac Yard Metro update, did you want to do that when we go around?
Well,
do you want to do that here? Or?
We have an option. I'm going to exercise executive privilege.
Okay.
I think after we get the staff update, if there's any contribution that you can make, I think from a flow standpoint that would make sense.
Okay.
And if there's anything, although I see Director Lambert is here to report out on, most likely will be the shutdown. Well, I may not have any additional information to add from the WMATA shutdown, but Director Lambert did present to the dashboard last week the city's action plan on the WMATA shutdown and the alternate transportation plan that is at the very high level state at this point. But any gaps that I might be able to fill in from what Dash may be able to do as far as what the general manager reported out, it might fit in well here rather than have to double back to it. So unless there's any objection, we'll proceed in that way. Okay, thank you. Staff's Potomac Yard update?
I mean, we can start with Bruce.
You can start.
Ours was fully consent, so I mean, I'm happy to maybe
if you thought something through.
I can happy to supplement whatever you provide.
All right. And I know Kanek was there as well, and we had a good, and Melissa, so we had a good turnout. So, please feel free to chime in. So, I think, there's a lot of work done before the holidays in terms of planning, going back to the drawing board and looking at the design, and there was a concept, kind of consensual concept that was put forward in terms of a big ramp. I won't go into a lot of details, but because of the $50 million that's been pledged with the Virginia Tech Innovation Center and the Amazon move, the PMIG has gotten back together to kind of go back to the drawing board because we had the initial design, and the goal is really to keep moving forward with the timeline, contractors in place, and make sure all the permitting, all of that continues to go forward. But the goal is to kind of figure out what can we do with these $50 million that the state has pledged. And so the team got together and presented kind of three different options. I thought they were all kind of reasonable on the spectrum of cost. One was very similar and close to what the original, with the second entrance kind of design. The problem with that was that there's a question mark. The costs have gone up, and it would be likely, couldn't give us a definitive amount of the cost to go back to kind of the original design, but it would be more than the $50 million that was pledged. And for a number of reasons, also the second bridge. And so then there were two other options, the smallest or least impactful was to add kind of moving walkways to the ramp design. And then another option, which I think there's general consensus within the group that this option one would create a lantern, kind of a real entrance to at the East Glebe Road intersection. And then similar to the approach that we had taken before the holidays. And I think there was general, if I'm not mistaken, I think generally the group, they liked the option number three, which was close to the original plan, but everyone realized we need to keep the project on track. There were a lot of question marks about it. And so That's kind of where we stand, I think, if that's a reasonable summary.
Sure, and Mr. Chair, I'm happy to add. I think it's a great summary. The Planning Commission, as well as City Council, through the DSUP in December, that tried to incorporate Heimig's interest last year in accommodating for the elements of the original design that had been taken out. So the approved DSUP in December was essentially an amended DSUP. Sorry to use all of these technical acronyms, but and as Mr. Marsh mentioned, because of the funding pledge from the state, what we are doing with PIMEG right now is working through some ideas that staff has been playing around with that reacts to how we would integrate the $50 million into the current project. In the initial discussions with the state, it was undetermined how quickly we would be able to implement the $50 million because the status of the project itself was moving so quickly. And I think a foundational idea for PIMIG and for the members of council that are on PIMIG and essentially anybody that is now associated with the project that is a stakeholder and a policymaker is that the project needs to stay on schedule for the 2022 opening. It's probably the most critical idea that we have. So what we are trying to do is consider ideas to integrate the $50 million without slowing the actual project down. And as Commissioner Marsh mentioned, I think we have some ideas that folks thought might work. We have a little bit of refinement to do, and what we also talked with PIMIG about was what the process, the decision-making process will be with PIMIG. That was really the outcome of Monday night's meeting, is to make sure that everyone was comfortable with the decision-making process that we would be using to integrate this funding and the second entrance. And so what the next step that needs to occur now that PIMIG is waiting on us is to get more refined cost estimates for one of the ideas. As soon as we have that, we're going to come back to PIMIG and we're going to represent all the options. PIMIG will give us formal input, and then as we discussed in December, we will likely need to amend the DSUP again. The plan would be to do that, and then would be to integrate that into the current design build project, if at all possible. You're going to also hear later tonight that staff is asking for the Transportation Commission, and will plan to take to City Council a grant application to the state for that $50 million. That will enable us to accelerate the funding as fast as we possibly can. So I apologize for the long discussion, but there's a lot happening with the project, and there's a lot of moving pieces and parts. Happy to answer any questions that you may have.
And if I just add to that, I think this was the initial meeting. There are three more meetings that are kind of on the calendar if we need them all, but that's the plan to kind of come back.
But not actually calendared, right?
The next meeting will occur for sure on January 28th. Yeah. The purpose of that meeting is to review the permitting process and where we are in the wetlands process. And so that meeting is, if at all possible, that's what is planned to do that meeting. It is unlikely that we will have cost numbers at the time for us to be able to make. So that's why we've got all these other meetings, because we're trying to stick to the schedule as much as we possibly can. And again, the reason that we're trying to stick to the schedule is because in order to keep the project on schedule, we will need WMATA to amend the project agreements in the spring, in March or April at the latest. And so the City Council is going to have to give guidance to WMATA to amend the overall project budget to take the project budget from $320 million to $370 million. So that's why.
Do you see any issues, procurement-related challenges associated with increasing the project budget in that way?
That is an excellent question. We have been working very closely with WMATA on that. WMATA has indicated to us that they do not see procurement issues. But we continue to work with them on that. It is not without risk. What we're doing is not without risk.
Right, because one of the people that we didn't give the contract to could say,
Exactly.
That wasn't what was bid out.
That is exactly right.
Yep.
So that's exactly why we are doing everything we can to work through that. But it is.
What's the total project budget again, pre the $50
million? $320
million. So it's still a substantial chunk.
Yes.
As a percent of the total project budget.
It's not a contingency amount.
Right.
That's correct.
Anything else in the pie bag? Oh, Casey?
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. One is related to the ramp. If I think what I understood you say, Bruce, is that there's a kind of a goal to address the $50 million ramp, I'll call it that. Is that going to put at risk the workaround that was being put in place? So the workaround is still going forward, and if the other thing can slide in, that will substitute for the workaround. Otherwise,
what you just said there is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Then my second question is somewhat related to the ramp, and that was at the meeting I attended, or the two meetings I attended, there was some great consternation about the trail user conflict with the pedestrian crosswalk at East Glebe.
Mm-hmm. That came up again at this meeting. In terms of looking at the potential replacement options,
right,
and how they would interface with bicycles.
Right. So my concern is that because it sort of disappeared, so I'm glad to hear that it has risen back up again and that it stays somewhere in that
it is in the
conversation.
Yep. Make sure it stays.
That it doesn't just sort of vanish and we're back to a real problem when the system opens.
So one of the proposals that was discussed, and I think the staff is going to look at, one of the options that they showed us was one with a return to a, what do you call it?
Lantern.
Pavilion. Yeah. Like an actual pavilion and not just an on-ramp.
The pavilion.
Yeah, and so that pavilion, the point was made that you put the pavilion there and all the people are exiting and the bikes are going right by, you're going to have accidents.
Correct.
And it was suggested that staff look into the design options of pushing the pavilion forward and allowing a bicycle route to go behind it so that it could just continue along the back instead of like this weird weave that it does around the water features. They're not water features, they're stormwater features. But you know what I'm talking about. So that was mentioned, and I think staff is I'm expecting staff to work through the feasibility of that.
So, you know, I
think just the one. Well, I think staff will be involved ultimately. It's going to. We'll have the design build. It'll be the design builder that'll
right.
do it.
Right.
The problem is if money becomes an issue again, all of a sudden that goes away and we're back to the conflict. So I hope that the option that I had tossed out at one of those meetings with the bike lane stays as a viable option because it is fairly inexpensive in comparison to moving a pavilion and trying to do some of those other workarounds, because you're still going to have people who are going to try to go to the front side of that pavilion,
right.
And particularly since that's still the trail crossing, the official trail crossing to the west side of the Potomac Yard Trail at East Glebe Road. So it's an imperfect solution to just kind of keep pushing. And until the trail gets completely
I was going to say, the west side.
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Any other questions on the Potomac Yard update?
I sort of get the impression that keeping the project on schedule is the overriding consideration, as opposed to making sure we build the right station. I don't understand why we should look at it that way. We have had a metro system in this city for decades without a station there. After this station is built, it will be there for decades, and whether it starts in 2022 or 2023 will be a long forgotten memory long after this station is built. So I would like to see a plan that fully restores the accessibility of this station from the south end, however we get there. And I wouldn't lose sleep at night if it cost us an extra year to get there. That's just my attitude.
I absolutely understand that perspective, and I'm very sympathetic to it. I think one of the options that we presented to PIMEG on Monday night was the restoration of the original design, and what we made clear to PIMEG is that is not
quite. You talking about three?
No, I'm talking about the original.
Just the original,
the very first,
design.
The original design. We actually showed the original design.
Yep.
And with all of the ramps and the two mezzanines and the second pavilion and and that alternative far exceeds the funding that we have now. Another foundational idea that I did not mention, I should have mentioned probably a minute ago, is that in my professional opinion, and I think the guidance that we have gotten back from the state, there is not going to be additional funding for the station external from an external source from the state beyond the $50 million that we're getting here. So one thing we did talk with PIMEG about was that we are trying to integrate the $50 million and come up with the best design that we can that accomplishes the initial goals of the station, but does so within a budget. And your point is very, very valid that we should not charge ahead without trying to come up with a design that accomplishes as many of the original goals as we can. We sort of actually had a little bit of that discussion on Monday night. The only reason that we are really emphasizing the schedule is that there is significant risk involved in this project integrating this funding. Some of that risk is that if we don't get the current project up and rolling and begin to draw down on the loans that we have and the federal money that we have, the funding package is
fragile. It could go the way of the streetcar.
The delays will eat into the resources.
The delays will eat into the resources and could potentially put the overall project at risk. And that's what everyone is very concerned about.
And
so we hear you loud and clear, but there are so many things that are going into sort of making this project happen that I think we're trying to balance all of those.
And if I could just add to that, the residents of Potomac Greens also, a number of them spoke up and said, you know, we want it to be as short, and you know, once we start, we want it done within 3 years and finished, because we don't want the disruption beyond the 3 years that they're prepared or have been preparing for. So that was the other thing that came up as well.
But I think you make an excellent point.
Related to that point, and something that I didn't think to ask at the meeting, for the third option that you presented, which is the one with the sort of moving the fair, is that what it's called, control equipment, out to the pavilion and allowing that new second mezzanine to be simplified and therefore a lot cheaper. Does that option allow potentially for a future down the road, separate from the project, subsequent improvement to that mezzanine, so that the missing connection to Potomac Green that's closer to them could be instituted at a later date?
No, it does not.
It wouldn't allow for
that.
It does
not.
Okay.
But I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing on the third. And I feel like we're spending a lot of time on this, so I don't want to belabor this point. Maybe I can talk to you offline about the third option. That option kept the fare gates where they were, but it introduced the elements in the pavilion, almost restored the whole pavilion except for all of that fare equipment there. So I think we just need to go. Maybe you and I just should go back and look.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any other questions of staff on the Potomac Yard update? All right, the next item would be the WMATA shutdown. Would you like to start? Or?
I just talked a lot.
Okay. Well, there's a very high-level plan that WMATA has in place right now, and this is based on the information that Director Lambert shared with us at the dashboard meeting last week, along with information that the bus general manager has shared at the same meeting. We had a board of directors meeting last week. It's a very high-level plan, so there's more unknowns than there are knowns, but the city has made it known of the concerns that we had from the last shutdown, which was extensive, and this is probably 100 times more complicated than the last one, even just the duration. It's going on for much longer than the original one did. But the challenge would be how they handle bus bridges and trying to provide some semblance of alternate service. So they're still working through that, they being the city and WMATA, and there's a meeting scheduled, I believe it's the 22nd? Well, City Council's presentation will be on the 22nd, but there'll be subsequent meetings with WMATA staff to develop the operational plan, and there is no operational plan at this point. But what the bus general manager had shared with us is that he has started to make contacts with other alternate transportation suppliers, and I use that term intentionally. For example, university bus transportation systems, University of Maryland, Virginia Tech, George Mason, James Madison, I think are three that he specifically mentioned, routinely do not have the demand for bus transportation service during the summer, which is when this shutdown is going to take place. And it is routine that bus operators that provide this service are furloughed. So what he's attempting to do is to try to work with these different university transportation systems is to take advantage of not just their drivers, but hopefully their equipment as well, in an effort to try to supplement what the city would like to be able to do in conjunction with WMATA.
That's an nice
so
idea.
He's thinking of some very creative ideas.
Yeah, it's a smaller vehicle, too, so it'd fit better on some of these streets. So
some of them could be smaller, but they do have other buses. He's also looking to lease, I guess that would be the right term, on a short-term basis, equipment from other transportation systems, such as New York City Transportation Authority, was one company that he reached out to for the use of articulated buses, which still can navigate our streets, apparently, and carry much more of the volume. So it lends itself ideally to shuttles to try to move as many people as possible. But pretty much one metro rail train is equivalent of about 9 to 10 buses, depending upon the loading at any given point in time. So it's not reasonable to provide a direct substitute. Well, 8-car, too. But, I mean, the buses have a very limited capacity. But he's looking at some of those creative ideas, which we very much appreciated to hear from him. Hopefully we can work with the different providers to work out the necessary arrangements to provide a better option than we did for the more limited shutdown that we had 2 years ago.
2 years.
Yes. Painfully remembering it now. Yes. Okay. But that was pretty much the highlights of what that discussion was. So, anything to add?
That's great.
Okay. Great. Any questions from the commissioners on this? Yes.
Has there been any discussion of having the buses be able to use the lanes on Route 1 being part of this?
Yes, we are, as part of the plan that we'll be presenting to council on the 22nd, we are going to talk to council about looking at HOVE lane changes and making the HOVE, well, we are primarily focused at this point on Washington Street. That is where most of the service and most of the service improvements would be, where we would get the most benefit from that service. So considering proposing taking those hot lanes from HOV 2 to HOV 3 plus, which we see as a benefit to transit, but also potentially is something that we would monitor very closely as an operational change to see if that's something we the city should be considering longer term. But still very early. Once we talk with council about this next week, there will be another round of public civic engagement. And we'll get some of those ideas out there. I think the only thing that I would really add is that we are trying to approach this event. We were talking about it in staffing today, sort of like the movie Dunkirk. I don't know if anybody saw that movie. It's going to be like collapse. Just like anything. We're throwing anything at it.
Anything
so that
can
move.
That can move.
Mm-hmm. Right. So,
our city staff. Using data about origin destination, I don't know the extent of its availability, but to help sort of figure out which connections are the most important and what those solutions might be fit those connections.
We've been talking with WMATA about that, and that's why they are. I mean, I think much of it is intuitive. I mean, we know where most people are going to the district, and then sort of what the through routes, and so that's why the shuttles that WMATA is proposing now, there are, of the four shuttles, there are two options that essentially bypass the city entirely, and they're getting people from Fairfax County on the HOV lanes on 395 to the Pentagon. Yep. There are two shuttles that will go through the city that will provide some opportunities for people within the city to use those shuttles. And then the added frequency that WMATA is discussing on the bus routes that it will supplement are the bus routes like the 11Y and the 10A and the 10B, the ones that are making the that are helping to replace a lost Metro Rail service. So yes, there is origin destination data that we're using. The calculation that's really most important to us is like how many, given our experience in past events, how many people do we need to plan for that would normally use Metro Rail? How many of those riders do we think are still going to stick with transit?
Right.
And making sure that we have enough seats so that we can accommodate the butts that would be in the seats
right.
on the trains, and make sure that those butts are going to right. buses.
So a different spin on that, I would posit, is that we suffered during SafeTrack with the loss of a lot of transit ridership, and we were still recovering from it, and we're going to lose it again in a concentrated way that hits Alexandria this summer. So I would say not only do you need to plan for the butts and seats in this sort of anticipatory way, but I think effort needs to be put toward convincing people to not give up on transit during this time and finding ways. I mean, telework is a good option because it's not putting cars on the road. And in the future, looking long-term in the future, telework is always going to be a drain on transit because it's going to become easier and easier to work remotely. I think we need to work as hard as we can to prevent people from giving up on transit. And that's like a promotional thing that probably is engaging your TDM team to figure out how you message it well in advance. I mean, people are already talking about it, but they're talking about it with like, it's going to be, this is the end.
Yeah,
right. Like they don't know what the options are, and they don't have any sense that there's going to be a solution.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I may add, just regionally, a lot of people recognize that one of the biggest mistakes of SafeTrack was the messaging of stay away from the metro.
Mm-hmm.
And so people want the exact opposite message going out, saying the metro stations are closed, but there's still a ton of transit and accessibility at these stations and on local bus service as well. So.
A theme that ran through the discussion with the general manager's presentation at the dashboard meeting was we wanted to take this, seize this as an opportunity to attract ridership and make it an option that will carry over well beyond the shutdown. And
mm-hmm.
if we provide the right service and provide timely, efficient service to them, hopefully we'll be able to retain or even gain some of the ridership that we've lost. And I agree, it was still taking a hit from ridership loss through the last SafeTrack operation.
Yeah, and that objective and sort of outcome, I think Arlington got with their 43 route, which is an interesting express route that goes from Crystal City. It stops once at the VRE station, it stops once in Roslyn, and then it stops once in Courthouse. And so it provided a connection during SafeTrack that solved for a lot of metro service disruption, and they really gained ridership because it provided an express connection that did that solution, and I think it kept ridership over a longer span. So to the extent that Dash could even experiment with express route connections that you might actually find are feasible options for people in the future, that this could be an opportunity for that too.
Yeah, there was express service from King Street to the Pentagon, which was very frequent service, and people took advantage of it, but that was just one option. So I think he's
mm-hmm.
looking to explore several, but
yep.
that was one that actually received very good feedback because it was a straight shot right into the Pentagon. So, okay. Anything? Oh, yes. Casey?
The jargon in Hillary's memo is bus bridge plan. Is the overall planning process, is that what it's called? The bus bridge plan?
The bus bridges, that term has been used sort of interchangeably. The most convenient way to look at the buses that are being provided is in sort of two buckets, and one bucket being the shuttles or the bus bridges, which is the buses that WMATA is paying for and will be providing, and which Dash will be providing one of those shuttles, but that will be replacing the rail service. So that is that's the primary replacement for the rail service. The second bucket of buses and bus service is existing service on which we're going to be increasing frequency so that that service is more attractive to transit riders. So those are that's the two buckets.
I just want to add one quick comment to Melissa's point that in order to try and minimize the loss of ridership on this process, there's only so much we can do to mitigate the extra time this is going to cost. But anything we can do to control the situation so that people don't actually wind up paying more for their trips will help us in the long run.
Yes, if Metro is
providing free shuttles.
Yeah.
Yes. Once you sort of re-engage with the Metro system, that's where we have Pentagon. That's where you'll
pay fair.
Yeah.
That will be great, or at least good.
It'll be helpful.
Yeah.
So I have one question on the transitway, or the Metroway rather. Will there be a plan to increase the frequency on the Metroway?
Yes.
So that will involve additional buses that aren't currently branded for the Metroway, right?
Yes.
And don't those have transponders in them to affect the traffic signals?
Yes.
So these other buses?
Still be Metro buses, as far as we understand right now. There's a little bit of limited capacity on Metroway,
right,
getting in and out of the dedicated lanes and the median. So that's one of the things that we're working through now.
So
an operational issue.
And there's also then the special training that those drivers have to have for the different types of signals. Okay. You guys got that all good.
I wouldn't go that far. I would say it's definitely on the radar of things that
it's on the plan to be covered before implementation.
A lot of things to cover as we prepare for Dunkirk.
Requalification is a big issue, although it doesn't sound like it's a problem, but requalification becomes a very tedious process as you get down to the wire because of the individuals that are on the road providing service, then you have to go through a route qualification process for the alternate service. So,
and if any of you want to drive buses, I mean, we're sort of like
John,
out there, right?
John helps with snow plows.
Oh, yeah.
CD applications are available
at
Facebook the door.
Facebook Live bus driving.
Yeah, bus driving. Great. Special bus drivers.
A group rate on the physicals. Okay. Anything else on the two items? Okay, we shall now move to commission updates. I'll just ask you if you have anything. Dad, any other members have an update? I'll go around the room, my left and back to me. Yes?
There's been two meetings for the Eisenhower West Landmark Van Dorn Group since I was last here. One of them, it was not too much about transportation. The most significant thing was the discussion of the Green Hill development, which is going to add a couple new roads in the neighborhood. That was the only thing. The other one was more of involved redevelopment plans for Landmark and how those are kind of being revised right now. It was more of a situation where city staff were in front of certain segments explaining those portions of the planning of the project. So like that wasn't so much a meeting as people kind of suggesting ideas and such. And the one thing that I found at that meeting, at least, this is obviously still very preliminary, and I talked to Jack Hardwick about this. Currently, at least as the drawing showed for Landmark, that the bus station is still supposed to be deep in the center of the mall, and Dak and I were kind of thinking, since we're a lot more open to a different plan now because of the way the property ownership situation has changed, then maybe we could do it differently. Maybe we could do the plan, the bus thing closer to the road rather than in the middle of the mall, like far away from Van Dorn. So there were different elements in that meeting. That's what I suggested in that particular section, and some other people talked about it. And then there's going to be a meeting, a public gathering, where we're all going to offer suggestions and such at Hammond Middle School on January the 26th. It's a Saturday in the morning. Feel free to register. There'll be breakfast and lunch provided, I believe. And that's from 10 till 2, right? Yeah. So kind of that's the next meeting that's coming up. So kind of not a ton has happened relating to transportation, not yet anyway.
Thank you. Anything from you?
Mm-hmm.
Anything from the environmental?
One thing I think worth mentioning, we just had a work session this week, so I don't have too much to report back on, except for a date you might want to note. On March 9th, they're going to be, the city's hosting an EcoCity Summit. It's almost a full day. It looks like it's going to start in the morning, go to about 2:30, and there might be a tour included for composting at that at the school that where it's going to be held. And there'll be a keynote speaker. The draft agenda is just being developed right now, so I should have more information next time we meet. But March 9th, and I know we're going to be looking at dates in March for our retreats, so I just wanted to put that out there.
What's the location? Sorry, did you say the location?
No, I didn't bring it with, there is a location chosen.
Isn't it Hammond? Because that's where they've got that recycling.
Yes, yeah, I think that is correct. Yeah. Does anybody else confirm that? Yeah, I think that's correct. Thank you. And then the Environmental Action Plan, we had a draft schedule given to us yesterday as well, but on Monday. It's not quite finalized, so I didn't bring it along. But it looks like it'll be early March will be the next version of the Environmental Action Plan after it goes through through management and staff internally, and that will be given to the Environmental Policy Commission as well as the public at the same time, and we post it online and have a survey feedback system in place, and then that will happen about a week or so before. Be released about a week or so before that EcoCity Summit, and then they'll cover the EAP at the summit as well. But it's not the only thing they'll be covering. A lot of it sounds like it's going to be more discussions and outreach about what individuals can do in the city and get a lot of excitement for it. It sounds like the last one was done in 2009 for the EcoCity Summit, and the report back on that was there was about 200 people who attended. It was a really big deal. The keynote speaker was extremely engaging. Someone who, so it sounded like it was really good, and that they're trying to do the same thing again. They want to repeat that enthusiasm and hopefully have a really good attendance.
Really, the first time we used like clickers for voting, so everybody loved the clickers.
Okay.
That was like the big thing in 2009. You know, like
they mentioned that they're going to be voting again. This time it was going to be with phones. There's going to be like something to do with phones, I think.
Yeah,
I think
it's gonna be they have those.
Yeah, I think that's
clickers are passe.
Yep.
Like Facebook, Facebook.
On the action plan.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understood correctly, there's going to be a draft for public comment.
Yes.
But it's going to be prior to this meeting on the 9th.
That is correct.
And then the 9th, they're going to present the feedback they've already received, or they're just going to present that the plan's still here, more comment is welcome.
Exactly, and then there's going to be actual tables that cover the topics, like round tables, and they're devoting, it sounds like it's up in the air, if they're going to have two or three topics you get to choose. People can prioritize three of them and then have multiple tables of each one, so that way people can rotate. And it could be up to 45 minutes per topic. Right now, I think it's set the agenda. Draft agenda had about 20 minutes, but there was some discussion of increasing the time to give people a little bit more time to get in depth, maybe with two subjects instead of less in depth with three.
So it's similar to that EcoCity Cafe
yes,
that was held.
Exactly. And then in addition, have a keynote speaker and a tour and everything else. And there was some discussion whether or not some media feedback was, wow, this is a full day, or you really think people will come in the morning, have breakfast, hang out all day, have lunch, and then stay through the afternoon, go on tour. But there sounded like there was a lot of enthusiasm that it really worked out well last time. And so as long as they get a really good keynote speaker and have all their ducks in a row, I think they can really promote this well and get a really good crowd to come in. So
well, I thought that cafe they did last year was pretty effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That actually had a good crowd.
That'd be great.
People too, so.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. So, yeah, mark your calendars all. But I should have a little bit more next time. It sounds like they were still in their initial planning stages.
Civic social activities.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just two smaller dash items. There was a decrease in ridership in November compared to October. In October, there was about a 5% increase. This the decrease from October to November was a little under 5%. We would also expect to see decrease in ridership with corresponding shortfalls in revenue because of the government shutdown, as a large portion of our riders are using our DASH system to move to their Metro Rail transportation points, we're not seeing that now. So I would expect to see ridership detail data to be driven lower the next time I report out. But on the positive side, the free student ride program,
good,
with the expansion of three new other high schools, has increased compared to the previous year. We're averaging close to 1,200 rides per weekday. It's providing opportunities for students that perhaps if they missed the bus may not have been at school. So I would hope that there'd be some corresponding data available through the school system of increased attendance. However, we don't have the hard data on that. But it's a good item that these hopefully we might be able to get to provide justification for this. Along with a more robust program may reduce the need for the robust bus transportation system provided by the Alexandria Public School System. So I'll pass this on to our two councilmen. That maybe there's some, if it's lower to middle school, there may be some relief options available, but I'll leave the council members to deliberate and ponder that thought. But there are some options that DASH can provide that will possibly reduce the overall expenditure for bus transportation service within the Alexandria School System, which includes physical plant and rolling stock.
Steve, on the student thing, has there been any thought about either DASH or maybe ACPS or two of you combined doing some kind of survey to understand why the kids are using the buses?
The general manager is looking into that. The passes are now available on smart trip cards that provides a good data source, who gets on, when they get on, and gives us a better definition of what the rider actually is compared to what it was last year, and it was pretty much flash a pass and you go on.
But I was thinking more in terms of kind of that speculation.
I think we'll be able to get to that hard data, as I referenced earlier. Then there could be some actionable decisions rather than just having anecdotal information about how our ridership has increased. And it gives options for the, for example, school system to ponder whether or not they want to consider alternate sources for transportation.
But, I would think that one of the schools might want to use the, the 1,200 riders as a nice data set for, some statistics class or something on AP class to do some analysis of, why you're using the bus and stuff like that. So it might be something for you guys to ponder or push out to ACPS.
Well, pass it on to the general manager, but he has a definite plan to try to get some hard data to be able to demonstrate it's not just a good thing to do, but it's actually resulting in a potential cost savings going forward, again, with the reduction of possibly the ACPS fleet and the corresponding physical plant to support that. But he's thinking long term.
Yeah, when he first started, we had a meeting with him, and that was one of his initial ideas he tossed out. I thought it was a good idea.
But he has his hands full right now, so he's prioritizing his action items. Okay. Yes?
I wanted to make a correction in my comment. The meeting that I said would be happening on January 26th is not at Hammond's, it's at the Hermitage at 5000 Fairbanks Avenue. So just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you. Any other commission updates? Okay. The next item will be the DRPT grant application for fiscal 2020 state aid programs. Item 5.
So, I'm happy to take this one, Mr. Chair. This item 5, there is no staff presentation on this. These are grant applications that the city is proposing to submit to DRPT by February the 1st. They will be on the City Council legislative docket on Tuesday night. We are taking them to the Transportation Commission now for your review and consideration prior to submitting to the City Council. Just a little bit of clarification here is that this is actually, frankly, sort of a mix of some funding that traditionally has been passed through DRPT and the city and NVTC to provide operating assistance for city transit services. So if you flip over to page 2, the top part of the first part of the state aid is something, the reason you're seeing this now, the reason these numbers are fairly big is that the state made some changes in law last year, and in reaction to that, because some of the performance metrics have changed, we are simply now taking this grant forward. We had this was money that was passed through previously. Now we are treating it as a grant and taking it through the Transportation Commission and the city council. So that operating assistance is not a new funding source. It's a funding source that we've availed ourselves of in the past. The reason that the funding amount is fairly high, that you see that we're asking for, approximately the $80 million, is because of the second item. In the state agreement, the MOU with Amazon, the state did commit to $295 million total in funding for the WMATA Amazon project, and the state indicated that it would go to five discrete projects. What the state has given guidance to the city and to Arlington County that it wishes for us to apply to the DRPT state transit capital to determine if we can accelerate some of that funding. That's why we are actually applying for it here. Although this is a grant application, the state's got to consider it. The state is also backstopping this money with what it had initially told the city and our jurisdictional partners that it would be using, which was the original source was state CMAQ dollars, state congestion mitigation and air quality dollars. Essentially, all the state has told us is that we want you to apply to this source first. If we can get this money to you sooner, it will allow you to accelerate the project. From our perspective, this is a good thing and a good opportunity for us, which is why we are applying. The Metroway extension was one of the projects that was agreed to with the state as part of the Amazon project. So the request that we are doing for here is for design money for the Metroway extension. The extension that I am speaking of is essentially a long block extension to Metroway from where it currently ends at East Glebe at the not Harris Theater, the Giant, and turns right and goes towards Potomac Avenue. The North Potomac Yard Plan envisions that Metroway will continue one block and will ultimately turn east or right onto Evans Lane, which is a road to be built as part of the North Potomac Yard Plan. So the reason we actually could not do this work for some years is that this will have to be integrated into the redevelopment of the Potomac Yard. The next three projects are all in cooperation with DASH. The DASH board actually considered all these at its last meeting. There's two main sort of initiatives here. The first is to apply. We are applying for DASH bus replacement funding, the grant application doesn't really reference it here, but what we are doing is that because the state has made some funding available as part of the Volkswagen Mitigation Fund, we are seeking to convert the planned replacement of some DASH buses from clean diesel to zero-emission battery-powered buses. So we would accelerate that transition. This grant funding source would allow us to purchase the rolling stock as well as the necessary equipment that would enable us to provide the electrical infrastructure. We are also proposing to apply for grant funding that would enable DASH to, this says DASH bus expansion, what this funding really is that it will enable DASH to get its spare ratio up higher. DASH currently has a fairly low spare ratio, and so what this funding would allow us to do is not actually increase frequency on any service, but it would allow DASH to get closer to about 20% spare ratio, which is a industry standard for a transit system of this DASH's size. And then the final piece of the grant applications is to address the is to recondition the powertrains for some of the older hybrid buses. We have money in the city's budget to provide battery packs and to purchase new battery packs. One of the things that DASH has found is that the powertrains themselves actually need reconditioning. So this is providing a little bit more flexible funding for us to both purchase battery packs and to recondition the powertrains. And I think with that, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer those. I mean, Evan is also here from DASH and can answer any specific DASH questions.
Evan is the Director of Finance for DASH, in case anyone.
Just to clarify a question. For the expansion, the spare ratio, what kind of buses? Is it related to the
diesel?
Is diesel clean diesel?
Yes. So I thought last fall
There had been discussion about deferring to get a different type of bus because the battery buses weren't quite ready for market, and this sort of implies that that possibly has changed.
So what council, let me make sure that I take a step back and be clear, that what city and DASH staff discussed with the city council, and I believe also with the Transportation Commission, ultimately the DASH, the ATC board, would make the recommendation of the rolling stock to purchase. The city council provides the funding to the board, but I'm just making sure I'm being careful with my language there. And what DASH did was tell the public that it was no longer going to purchase hybrid buses, so buses that are both battery and the reason for that is that the hybrid battery packs have been proven challenging for DASH to maintain over time, and so DASH is no longer purchasing the hybrid buses. DASH is now purchasing clean diesel buses. The buses that it is currently buying are still the low emissions clean diesel buses, so we are getting an emissions benefit. But what we also explained at the time was that we are working very hard to move to an all-electric fleet, and the plan was that if we could go after Volkswagen Mitigation Trust settlement money sooner to begin incorporating electric buses into the fleet sooner, that we would do that potentially as soon as fiscal year 20 and 21, and that's what this is doing. What DASH did not commit to was a hard timetable for when we would make the full transition from clean diesel to electric buses.
Yep.
That is still to be determined.
Yep.
And we are still working through that because of the electrical infrastructure needs, and because there is a very significant capital difference in purchasing all electric buses than clean diesel.
I get all that, but the question was, DASH is now feeling comfortable that the technology is proven enough to go.
Well, it was never really a question of technology; it was more a question of cost, the capital difference.
Yeah, the capital investment.
That's really
to
what,
make the transition.
That's right,
yeah.
And that's what. I'm sorry, I didn't explain that well. What the VW Trust Fund money is enabling DASH to do is make up the difference.
Got it. Okay.
So, is that all fair?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
then,
as I remember it.
Then my second question is about the Metroway extension. So I get the $1 million that the city's going after for planning, but I'm a little confused about the $5 million that the state is putting up, given the fact that the redevelopment of Potomac Yard and where Evan Street would run, which is where basically what target is,
right,
is probably years away. So what is the state's expectation of when this project would actually execute?
The state is aware that this funding would potentially not be spent until 2026 or later, or 2028. Actually, when in the initial discussions about the Amazon project, it was clear the state incentive package that was agreed to as part of the Amazon project staggered the funding out over a number of years because the Amazon, and it tied the funding to the job creation, so that the funding that the state committed to was actually 10 or more years of funding, and the state has simply given us this opportunity to sort of lock in this money now, and so from the city's perspective, we are going to go after the money now because we want to get the money in and on the books. There is no requirement that we will spend the money by a certain time, we will not lose the money. It also needs to be made clear that we are still working through what the ultimate project cost may be, and it was envisioned as part of the North Potomac Yard plan. It was never clarified whether it will be a city or developer, but the ultimate project cost will likely be more than $5 million, and there will likely be either additional state or city funds that go to the project and some combination of developer contributions that go as part of the redevelopment.
So is it an expectation that the $1 million that you're going after plus the $1 million matching from the city will cover the design costs for this?
What we're going after now is the $1 million.
Plus the matching from the city.
The match will be a part of the five.
Oh.
The dash, the DRPT will recognize, the city is out nothing is what I'm trying to tell you at this point.
Okay.
The city, the state is making the city whole up to its commitment of $5 million. In the Amazon incentive package, there was funding in that for both Alexandria expansion and for Arlington expansion. I'm going to keep looking at Melissa, I'm sorry. The point is that the city would not be out any current money, that we would just be able to lock in the five.
Any other questions or discussion on this item? Do I have a motion to approve the fiscal 2020 DRP capital operating plan grant item as proposed?
Sure. I will make a motion. I'd like to make a motion that the Transportation Commission find that the DRPT grant applications are consistent with the Transportation Master Plan for Alexandria, and that in doing so, we support the submission of $85 million in grant applications and support the city manager to apply for state aid grants through the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission and enter into any necessary agreements with the Commonwealth of Virginia or NVTC to accept any of these grants.
We have a second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 6, informational item on the shared mobility pilot program.
All right. Staff came to you in October to talk about the shared mobility pilot program. So some of these slides are the same, so hopefully they let you know. Real quick, just so everybody's on the same page, shared mobility devices, they're essentially the dockless bikes, the dockless scooters that we see around. They're all over D.C., they're starting to be here, they're in the Arlington. So several jurisdictions around the region have already started pilot projects to permit dockless or shared mobility device operators, SMD operators. D.C. and Montgomery County started theirs about a year and a half ago. Arlington just approved theirs in September to start in October. And City Council approved Alexandria's in November to start in January. So some of the program highlights what was proposed and then approved is that there's a permit fee of $5,000 per vendor, a cap of 200 devices, security features, parking and use regulations, and information and feedback requirements as well. So again, the status was that this was approved in November by City Council to be a 9-month pilot with the ability to extend it if we decide that this is probably something that we want to go forward with, so that service doesn't have to stop and then start again in October. One vendor has already permitted it here, Lime, so you'll probably see Lime scooters, Lime bikes around. Two others have submitted permits, and three others have expressed interest in permitting here too. So it's definitely a good start, especially considering that it's winter, and winter is the most favorable for getting around outside, I guess. As far as community engagement, we held several community engagement events. We went to a lot of different meetings and presented. Heard a lot. I mean, we had an online survey. We had a lot of feedback, over 500 responses from the feedback, as well as information on our website and social media. And this didn't look quite as small on my screen upstairs, so I'll just go through this quick. There was a lot of really good input that we modified the agreements, the permit agreements. With, for example, obstructing sidewalks and improper parking. So we have put a little bit of responsibility on the vendors, and we're also working with the Old Town Clean team to educate them on kind of the proper placement, or, you know, if they're blocking the sidewalks along King Street. Riding electric scooters on sidewalks was a really big issue. And so the Virginia Code is actually somewhat unclear on whether it's legal or illegal, or somewhat conflicting. So we're just staying essentially consistent with Arlington County in that scooters should be ridden in the street, not the sidewalk. And then riding without helmets was another big concern. So they're not required. Helmets are not required per the Virginia Code. But we are handing out. We do hand out bike helmets at events, and in Arlington, the providers have also had events where they're handing out helmets as well.
And don't the providers actually encourage the use of helmets on their website?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. On the app there.
Can you go back?
Yeah.
So, how do companies are required to encourage users to operate scooters on the streets and not sidewalks? Is there something on the app that says stay off the sidewalks?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, essentially.
The like instructions that they give you.
So, but there's still a problem out there, and I think it became more pronounced after the holidays, which is there are personally owned scooters. Mm-hmm. So not all scooters that you see out there are necessarily owned by these companies, and so I'm not sure how we're reaching Joe Bob Citizen, who owns his own personal scooter, in terms of the proper use of it. So I think that's still a bit of a challenge out there. And I'm certainly seeing more non-branded scooters out there. So people are buying their own.
Yeah, that's probably pretty exciting.
So we'll take one thing at a
time. Never thought of it.
Yeah, I think as this evolves, and to be consistent with the city's Vision Zero program, I'm sure there are going to be changes going forward. I think it's important that, and I do thank the staff for doing this presentation. I know I had requested it in a pre-meeting briefing, I'll say we got a presentation in October. My understanding, we would get a response of here's the proposed plan, and it was actually presented to the city council for their approval, so the commission did not have an opportunity to weigh in on the plan, but this is very helpful. But I think it's important that these items, at least right now, be brought to the attention of the city staff and to members of the council sitting here, so that as the nine-month pilot progresses, we'll be able to address some of these items with the company-leased items, but also being mindful of whatever options the city may have available with respect to, I'll call them generally safety concerns, with personal items that's consistent with the city's Vision Zero program. Which the commission has endorsed, obviously.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So, page two of this is another big concern was scooter speed limits at 15 miles an hour. Some jurisdictions have 10 miles an hour. And we felt that we would keep it at 15 because, first off, there's on-street safety issues if the scooters are going too slow, just the difference in speed. Also, if they went too slow, that would encourage people to actually ride them on the sidewalks. And then there's actually no data to say whether, like, what is a safe speed that they should ride at yet.
So, Chris, how does that work? So Arlington County says 10 miles an hour, and I'm riding on that scooter. Does it automatically jump up to 15 when I cross the city line? Yeah. Or does it automatically decrease when I get into Arlington County? Yes.
You know, we laugh, but they're working on that. They're trying to figure out how to make it work.
Their whereabouts are known by GPS, and so it's a software programmed item. So, not that it's foolproof, but there's a potential
speed. But the governor would change.
But I mean, is that the theory? Is that what we're hoping also? Is that when the scooter arrives from Arlington, the jurisdictions adopt different speed limits,
Texas,
how
yeah.
anyone was enforcing it, going to be able to enforce it.
Interesting.
So, in a way, it's better probably that we just chose the higher end, but I don't understand.
Yeah, no, and you know, so, like some of these, are, you know, you bring up a really good question. You know, a lot of these are open questions too, to figure out how we actually do operationalize some of these differences. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with scooters going 10 miles an hour, so
right.
if that was decided and our speed limit was 15, like obviously nobody would have a problem with that. Some of these things are going to get worked out. So that's why this is a pilot. You know, we're not saying these are absolute rules forever. So.
Yeah, I agree. But what's happening is, you know, the dialogue out there is, mm-hmm. is different. You know, they're speeding or whatever, and I'm not sure how people are judging that. But so there's this kind of this mixed message about, well, Arlington had 10 and we adopted 15, so it makes it seem like we went for a higher speed, when in reality they maybe went for a lower speed. But so 15 might be the industry standard. That's not how the message is appearing. It's appearing that Alexandria is letting the scooters go faster.
All right. I just want to make sure that I add. I think one of the things that we've talked a lot about is that Chris is exactly right. A lot of this is going. The intent of the pilot is to go through some of these issues. But one of the reasons that we discussed as a staff why we thought 15 miles an hour was the right speed is because we are saying that the devices should be on the street.
I agree. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that what's happening.
I just wanted to make sure that I stated it.
No.
Why the decision was.
But what's happening is people are getting this idea that Alexandria is letting them go faster.
Yeah. I understood.
Mm-hmm. That's because we're cooler than Arlington.
Well, it could be, but.
Perception that definitely is risk averse.
We know we're not cooler than Arlington.
And it is a 9-month pilot, so
right, exactly. Yeah. And you know, as we found with dockless bike share, for example, after 9 months or a year, a lot of the companies switched. So who knows? Maybe there will be another technology that they the firms prefer in a year anyway. So and then you know, insurance compliance, and then you know, the sustainability, like the life cycle of the device. Some of these are more appropriate in you know, kind of longer term permitting structures and not in the 9-month pilot. So other requirements, I was asked to present some other requirements. So there's in the MOU, which was attached to the docket item, which I'm sure all of you read every single word of it.
I do.
Okay, so
yes.
The chair, vice chair, of course. You know, there's safety requirements in there. There's parking requirements in there for the vendors to encourage correct parking. There's operations requirements, data requirements, data to provide to the city so that you know, the transportation planners can help plan where they're you know, where they're most appropriate, how many people are riding, et cetera. And then advertising restrictions on the bicycles or the devices. So the framework, again, we are going to spend the next 9 months or so evaluating a lot of the data, a lot of the feedback we get from the community, also be hosting specific events or surveys, or we haven't decided how to get community feedback yet, the best way yet, or you know, which different ways we are, but you know, we have 9 months to figure that out. And then a final report will come to City Council and most likely also the Transportation Commission towards the end of the year.
I would like to make a formal request to get that report.
Okay. Absolutely. Yes.
I have a question on kind of dispersion. I know in the MOU it talks about service area and, you know, these operators that sign up can operate basically anywhere they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious, was there any discussion about making sure that – and I assume this is a business decision. Obviously, they're going to put the bikes, you know, look at the data and then determine, you know, where it makes most sense for them and where it's most profitable. But is there any discussion about making sure that, you know, parts of the city are covered, that there's at least a minimum number of bikes, like in, you know, areas of the West End or, yeah.
Yes. So
okay.
We certainly have talked about how ways that we can incent more geographic equity.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things we have been watching pretty closely is like, where are they ending
up? Right, right.
There certainly are a lot ending up in the areas that you would think that they naturally would, in parts of the city where there is a grid. And but we're also seeing a lot of the devices over on the West End. And,
okay.
And so we're
good.
Pleased to see
good. Good.
Question about parking. There was a picture of a couple of scooters earlier where it looked like they were standing on their own vertically. Do they come with a
kickstand?
I don't know
they
what
do.
You call
kickstand.
It.
It's stored securely.
Device.
Yes. as opposed to sidewalk junk.
Yeah.
Which is this.
But then the wind comes and whoosh, down it goes.
Yeah. They don't have the best balance, but they do have kickstands.
So I didn't see that was a requirement. It's not in the among the safety things, but it's just integral to the whole design of the scooter.
I think that deactivates it, so you're not charged. So the incentive is to put it at least set the kickstand up. Okay. So you're charging. You're not charged for any progress. So there is a motivation, if no other reason than financial. At least properly.
But you can also, when they're docked and if they're in your way, you can actually roll them. You can only roll them X number of feet before an alarm starts to go off and then the wheel locks.
Yeah.
If you wait a minute or so, it stops and you can proceed down the pathway a bit further. So I encountered one right below the sidewalk the other day and I just moved it.
Yeah, there was a press report, I think it was in the Post, about a person that didn't see the thing lying on the street and he fell over and
right.
So, so far we're only, I think, a weekend since. But have you guys started having a discussion about logical locations for corrals for the vehicles?
We've talked about kind of the process of where those would be, you know, and a lot of that will depend on the data that they provide us.
But you don't anticipate proactively putting in corrals during the pilot program?
Only if there's an extreme, a very compelling case that there would be one.
So most of your presentation focused on the scooters. The bikes, from the perspective of the presentation, aren't posing the same challenge as the scooters are at the moment, or you're not seeing the same challenges?
You know, we're not seeing the same, essentially, supply of that, mostly scooters.
Yeah. And I think my knowledge regionally is that the electric bicycles are not being ridden on sidewalks.
Yeah, I was just thinking more broadly, and just in terms of, the speed limits, the concern about...
Well, so that's part of it, though. So because they're not being used on sidewalks... there's been less sort of community pressure to change or to control how they're being used.
Well, and they look like a bike, and so...
Yeah, and
it's
they're used
more
to
traditional
them.
Bike-like behavior.
Yeah,
than
right.
I think they're moving here.
Migrating, yes.
I'm not seeing a lot of the electric assist limes in Alexandria.
One right now.
There's one. I was just looking right now.
But
maybe two, but there are a lot. I think Farrellington and in South Arlington, and I think that we're going to see more of them.
Right.
But the Capital Bike Share ones, I've seen them all over Alexandria.
Yeah.
So they really
got
one. I almost got one.
Yeah,
someone beat me to it.
They're great.
Oh, yeah.
Any other questions for staff on the? I'm sorry, you're not finished.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Any other questions for staff?
Is there any plan to do like kind of a signage like on major thoroughfares saying don't ride scooters on the sidewalk? Like, there's a couple of the don't ride your bike on the sidewalk here. There's a couple of signs around City Hall and all that, but.
No, I mean, right now we're relying on the vendors to alert the user that they should ride the street.
And what about additional bike lanes? I mean, is that, because you always, at least the argument I keep hearing now is like, okay, you really, the battle should be to get more bike lanes so that folks on scooters can use those, so, which would be a great idea.
Yep.
But we're working on those independent of scooters.
Forgive me if you covered this in your presentation. Have you all done trainings with the police department on understanding how the pilot's working, what the general enforcement strategy is going to be, and maybe even targeting sensitive areas? Like, we experience the Union and King intersection as being a sensitive area already for bikes and pedestrians, and it could get a little bit worse if in the summer months you get an influx of these electric devices there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we worked with the police before, while we were crafting this, the MOU and the pilot program, and then before we talked to council, and then after it was approved by council, we've been working with the police.
Great. Yeah, I think it's a good idea for it to be a very ongoing, engaged relationship.
Hands-on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they're also eyes on the street mm-hmm. that staff can't be. And they can give you a sense of what there is. It's all anecdotal, but they can give you a sense of what they see users' mistakes being and other community members' concerns being or experiences with these, even if they're not users.
Mm-hmm. So to follow along with that, I know the police are getting complaints about the scooters, and so that might be a useful database to grab hold of, whether it's coming in through Call, Click, Connect or whatever, just to sort of compile with what you guys are getting also.
If we type on Call, Click, Connect, then we're encouraging people to use it.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the plans for, when you mentioned it, the safety is definitely a theme that has come up, but one of the concerns I know it came up before is, you know, being a lot of times it's newbies that are using the scooters or maybe these electric bikes because they're not necessarily who's been a bike commuter for a while or something. So I've been definitely worried about like the zigzagging in and out of park. You know, for a little while you got a little spot and then you have the outcrop of the sidewalk and then they go back in. So I was worried about those types of safety things, and I was wondering if there's anything planned at this point, outreach or training. I know like when you sign up, they kind of explain like follow the bike laws and things like that, but I feel like there's almost like a practice that
maybe
needs to happen.
Maybe that could be something at Earth Day.
It could be. I know they're doing
the
bike rodeos for kids anyway.
Scooters there mm-hmm. that people can
try them out and like learn some. I just feel like there's going to be some handling skills that are going to be needed, and I'd rather be done before there's a real accident. Like this one's one of those ones that like, oh, it could be actually collision with cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if there's ideas there that either the city's doing or outreach
encouraging
through.
Encouraging advocacy groups like WABA, uh-huh. and I think that's where we get a lot mm-hmm. of the best bang for our buck is partnering with nonprofits and advocacy groups like WABA. Just like
is WABA getting involved with this one?
And
with the scooters?
You know, I know WABA has been advocating for the allowance of scooters
mm-hmm.
and electric bikes. I personally have not seen that they're doing any
innovation
yet,
mm-mm.
but I think that's one of the things that we probably should be talking with them about.
That'd be great. They could do little community rides with the scooters just to kind of give those handling skills of, you know, where to be in the lane and those sorts of things that are something I don't think is intuitive to someone who's never ridden a bike and now they're just jumping on the scooters.
Mm-hmm. Maybe an LCI could take something.
I definitely had it in mind.
I know the safe operator behaviors
to
share.
Don't jump off the curb.
Any other questions for staff on this
issue?
Okay. For the record, I'll submit to Director Lambert an article that appeared in the Washington Post business section on January the 13th dealing with pedestrian e-scooters, clash, and the struggle for space. For your disposition and handling, for staff in consideration for what may be the extension of the 9-month pilot. Thank you for indulging us.
Chair?
Yes.
Just on that similar note, I wanted to mention staff probably is already aware of this. T for America published a document on the 15th. Was that yesterday? Yes. Their new playbook on micromobility. So I want to make sure that you guys have it and are reading it, and I'm going to try to read it.
Micro-mobility is different than shared mobility?
Shared micro-mobility playbook is what they call it. So it's about dockless bikes, electric scooters, and other new technologies, and their advice on it.
Could be, you know, skateboards.
The more pretty
things
put on it, the
hoverboard.
The hoverboards, yes.
I can't wait for the hoverboards.
Me neither.
I can. All right. Moving on to item 7, there will be a joint meeting of the Transportation Commission and the ATC Board of Directors on February the 13th, and the retreat that was scheduled for the 23rd needs to be postponed to March.
Yes.
Are there, and we agreed it would be a Saturday morning, if I remember correctly.
It can be.
Okay.
I believe
that was the discussion that we had to make it more of a traditional retreat
mm-hmm.
feeling, along with staff's or the commissioner's availability to attend.
I just want to give an update. So that February 13th meeting, that's specifically related to the Alexandria Transit Vision Plan, and we came to you back in the fall to kind of give an overview of that project. So we're coming back to you with a couple of different network scenarios that we want to hear input on before we do the public outreach later this spring.
Have we agreed on a time for that?
7 o'clock. And And it will be at the DASH facility, the board.
This is the February 13th meeting?
The February 13th meeting, yes.
7 p.m. DASH boardroom.
Okay. And there is parking available there for those.
So they'll open up the scooter park for
Should you want to avail yourself a scooter, I'm sure they'll be able to accommodate that. Or a bicycle or an e-bike or any other method of conveyance of your choice.
We have our regular meeting the following Wednesday.
Right now, that's currently scheduled for the following Wednesday. Yes. Okay. And for the Transportation Commission retreat, are there dates in March that people cannot make?
March 9th.
Maybe could you send out a doodle
sure.
announcement? Because I know there's a.
Is the 16th.
I'm sorry?
Is the following.
Is the 16th?
Yeah, so I think that one's going to be off too.
So the 9th is the Eco City Summit.
The 16th
is council.
The 2nd, the 23rd, or the 30th.
30th is not good for me.
No, the 22nd isn't good for me, but looks like we may be pushing this to April.
The 23rd?
The 23rd? Whatever that Saturday is.
Okay. What about March 2nd? Or is that city council also?
Yeah. So the 2nd or the 30th? Should we do the interval?
Well, maybe we could, because the 30th won't work for me either. I'm away the last 2 weeks. But okay. The 2nd, is there anyone with a conflict on Saturday, March 2nd? Maybe we'll go with that date then?
Okay.
Okay.
So this is our retreat?
The retreat. I think we said from 9 to noon, something like that.
Oh, what is it?
I was just looking
at
that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be heartbroken if I don't make the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Okay, yeah. I mean, or traditionally, you know, it's always been, they've been on the first Wednesday of the month, 2 weeks before the Transportation. But if we prefer to send Sunday, Saturday, then, and if we choose March 2nd, then we should probably not have it in City Hall.
I mean, the St. Patrick's Day Parade is 12:30.
Oh, 12:30, okay.
So we could do it in the morning.
So we could do it
in the morning.
We'll have a hard cutoff of noontime. Then
yeah.
You
there
can,
we go.
Get the car bound for
him.
Have it here.
Did we set
this
time
is
already?
This is coming together very well.
Yeah.
First thing in the morning, so we don't miss the parade.
We have Irish
coffee.
It's an option. I leave it up to your choice.
Come in your Irish outfit.
Favorite outfit, man.
We will serve.
Well, if you'd like to propose a
beer.
Time that works,
excuse me, Chris.
Yes.
Did we set a time?
Staff. I think the only thing that we discussed was in general starting in the morning and ending around noontime, so I think it was 9 to 12, but if there's no opposition to an earlier start given the the issue of the parade later on,
I
get up early, so it's good.
So in looking at the last retreat, it only lasted 2 hours?
Yeah, it wasn't very,
so
very long.
So if we say 9 to 11?
That's good.
That sounds
good. Yeah.
Okay.
If you just let us know the location.
Chris is like, don't make me schedule 4 hours of material, please.
The advance reading.
Saturday morning.
On a Saturday morning.
Okay. Any other business that we need to discuss before?
Yes, Casey? At the next Transportation Commission, we're going to start talking again about the mobility plan.
Yes.
Yeah, I had that same question. So that's on the 20th. We'll meet at 6.
Yes.
And is it every meeting subsequent for the next however long that plan lasts?
Right, yeah. And I apologize for having canceled it. We're finalizing with consultants right now. So there wasn't really anything to report or get feedback on.
So this means our meeting is start at 6 as opposed to 7, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else to discuss before we call for an end? All right. Do we have a motion to conclude the meeting this evening?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
our new council member down there, right? I've got a lot to learn.
Don't call him, though.
He's the new appointee to the commission.
Yes, and he's also on the Potomac Yard.
Is this being made?
Okay.